Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Saturday, May the 14th. And as we like to do once in a while, we'll be chatting with our good friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. Three things we want to get into with George today. Number one, the governor's race between Governor Abbott and former Representative O'Rourke. The attorney general's race. There's a very interesting front page article today in the Dallas Morning News about this race between Mr. Bush and Attorney General Abbott. And then we're going to look south to what could very well be the most interesting of all these runoffs, and that's between Representative Cuellar, the incumbent, and a challenger from the left, a Jessica Cisneros. So lots to get into today with our friend George Rodriguez. So let me say hi to George. George, it's kind of hot and humid up here. How about down there in South Texas?
Yeah, it's humid. We've got a Gulf breeze coming in, so that makes things even more humid. But the temperature is pleasant right now. It's in the mid-80s, which for us is very pleasant. However, it is supposed to get warm, very warm, later today and tomorrow. It's going to get just scorching hot.
Well, as we speak right now, it's 82 here, so about the same, I guess, as down there. And it will go up to, it looks like, the low 90s, and then it will be 100 tomorrow, 97, 99, 97, 97, the rest of the next 5 or 6 days. So do you think summer is here, George? Maybe a little early?
I believe it is. It's either that or climate change. I'm not sure.
Well, one of the two. One of the two. And I'll put my money on summer because he's been doing it every year. You know,
yeah,
since
really.
I live here.
Like clockwork,
you know,
huh? Funny.
Yeah, he comes early every year. I don't know what it is about this guy, but he likes to show up early. And he stays late, too, if you remember. He doesn't like to, he likes to get here early, and he doesn't like to leave when he's supposed to. So summer, I guess, is what Texas is all about. George, I want to bring up a point, and you know, I think many of our listeners know, and or if they don't know, you were working with the Reagan administration back in the 1980s, and the Reagan administration back then was facing an inflation recession challenge. At least the inflation. We're not in a recession technically yet, but seem to be headed that way. And the Reagan administration faced a very serious challenge and eventually was able to overcome it. Now we have a situation here, and I want to specifically bring up this baby formula problem that we're having in the country, which must be a nightmare for any mother out there with a young child or a young baby. Look, I'm not going to blame President Biden directly. I'm pretty sure he didn't mean to create this crisis. I cannot think of any human being that would do that. But what we're seeing here is a little bit of what we did not see with Reagan. With Reagan, it seemed like they had a plan and they stuck to it, and they had a way of explaining it to the American people. Here it seems like this administration is a bit more reminiscent of President Carter, where every day there was a problem. And every day there was a president who couldn't explain the problem and made the problem worse, in fact, anytime he explained it. So that's kind of a long-winded question there, George. But how do you react to all of this, to comparing it, I said, to the last time we had a crisis like this with President Reagan, and you were there in Washington, George?
The biggest difference that I see, Silvio, is that President Reagan approached it from a supply side economic type situation, and these folks seem to be addressing it from strictly a green plan. It seems like the environment is more important than anything else. The issue of energy, the energy crisis. I mean, we turned it loose under the Reagan administration. They turned it loose. Here, they don't want to do that, because it's going to pollute, it's certainly not going to, you know, on the contrary, they're going to blame the companies. The second issue is that, you know, removing restrictive regulations that prevent a company or a business from doing its job and getting out and doing things. This whole baby formula issue occurred because there was one, there were a couple of incidents where there was some type of I don't want to say poisoning, but there was some kind of problem with the formula. Rather than letting the company clean it up, check it back out, and then let them continue, they shut it down, and it's been shut down for several months now. I mean, it is. There's a world of difference in how they approach things. They seem to approach things with this battering ram, and then they turn around and wonder why it's broke.
Well, that's exactly right, and I keep looking at it. Of course, it's always easy to look back, and everybody has, as they say, hindsight is 20/20. But I don't think it's unfair to criticize the Biden administration and how they dealt with it. Again, I'm not going to blame them for the fact that the baby formula had to be recalled or something. I mean, that happens. That happens in any business. But if you're the Secretary of Commerce or you're the somebody in this administration and you hear the FDA, you hear that a baby formula plant is going to shut down, and that baby formula plant is a major supplier of baby formula, that you would at least say, you know what, we may have a shortage here. In fact, I think the company probably could have told them that. And then you go to the White House and you say, look, folks, we have a problem. Let's try to come up with Plan B. Let's see if we can import formula from Canada, from Mexico, from Europe, so that at least the shelf is not empty. And you've got these mothers in total, complete panic. I don't blame them. It's their babies we're talking about. So it just seems to me here that once again, it's almost like Afghanistan. Again, George, in Afghanistan, they didn't have a clue of what they were doing. And here again, you know, they don't have a clue of what they're doing and how to fix the problem. It's the same issue with energy. It's the same issue with gasoline. I mean, it just seems like they kept getting hit between the eyes. And you get the feeling, George, they don't have a clue of what they're doing. And maybe there should be some people fired in this White House. I would start with the Secretary of Transportation, who never in his life had a transportation job, George.
That's right. You know, the problem that I see, and again, it's easy for me to make this criticism because I happen to be a conservative Republican, and I loved everything that Mr. Reagan did. You know, so I'll put that disclosure out there first. But the fact that so many of the people that Reagan involved were people that were on the front lines of whatever it was that they were, that they were dealing with. People that had dealt with transportation issues, people that had dealt with the defense, people that had dealt directly with the border, people that had, I mean, that's who he pulled in. And unfortunately, particularly in this administration, in this Biden administration, I keep seeing experts who turn out to be professors, authors, writers, you know, hardly the people that you think of that deal with it on a daily basis. These are folks that are theorists. And one thing is to deal with the theory. One thing is to deal with suppositions. Another thing is to deal with reality. And this is the headache that I continually see with this administration. They just don't seem to deal with reality.
Right. Well, that's exactly it. I mean, I feel I know exactly what you're saying because, you know, and I don't, you know, I don't want to overdo it with the Secretary of Transportation, but it seems to me if you are the President of the United States, George, in January of 2021, and you know that transportation is going to be an issue that is going to consume your administration. Because of the pandemic, you know, we had supply chain problems. So it seems to me that you would go out and you would find the most competent, even if you have to look at a Republican, you would find the most competent person that you can possibly find who has experience with transportation, supply chains, and so on, and put him in that job. But no, what do? They go out and they find, you know, this fellow Pete, whose last name I can never pronounce, Buttigieg, I think it is how you say it. And the guy turns out to be, he has no, his only political experience is that he was the mayor of a city about a third of the size of San Antonio. Maybe not even that, a suburb in San Antonio would be bigger than the city he was the mayor of. He's had no experience in transportation, but they put him there for identity politics. That's what's the problem here. You don't have a man surrounded by people who know what the heck they're doing. You have a man surrounded by people who check little boxes in the identity politics list. That's their problem, George.
Yeah, you capsulized it right there. I mean, look at the new press secretary that they've got that has replaced Psaki. This person is a lesbian, a black lesbian, who has very limited press credentials, and she already is stumbling her way through this situation, through her job. She's only been on the job for about
a day.
And she's already stumbling through it. And, you know, again, this is what happens, Silvio. This is what happens when you pursue affirmative action on steroids, when the identity politics matter much more than the competence and abilities of the individual. Yes, we should reach for equality. We should reach for diversity. We should reach for the, but not at the expense of qualifications. Not at the expense of experience. Not at the expense of abilities. I mean, I would love to play for the Mavericks, you know, but I can't. I mean, and it's unrealistic for me to demand it, to file a lawsuit about it, for them to put me on the team just because.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. So
it's unrealistic.
Right. Yeah, it's just insane, George. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's insane what these people are doing. And I go back to the Secretary of Transportation because that was probably one of the most important appointments that the president had to make in this environment of the pandemic and everything else. And for this man to be selected who doesn't have a clue, who then takes paternity leave, I guess, for 6 weeks or whatever it was last year because he wants to stay home with his new baby that he adopted with his, with his partner, who is also a guy, you know. And that's, look, again, this is not really about, I want to make sure that people understand that this is not really about his sexual orientation. That's not where I'm coming from. That's not where I don't really care who he's married to. But I do care that he has experience in transportation at a time when a Secretary of Transportation is probably the most important person in the cabinet right now. But anyway, I agree with you. I think the confidence level is just dropping and dropping and dropping in
extremely.
This administration. Extremely. I mean, and all you got to do is look at the polling data and just ask any Democrat, some of these Democrats that we're going to talk about today if they want to invite President Biden to campaign for them. It's going to be really, you know, he's not going to have a lot of invitations to campaign this summer and fall. Well, let's talk about the campaigns. That was why we brought you in, so let's get started with that one. The big name one, of course, the most expensive one, is going to be the governor's race, Governor Abbott versus former Representative O'Rourke. The latest poll that came out has it Abbott plus 11. Governor Abbott does have some problems. The border is one of them. The property tax is another one. This thing with the lights, but the problem we're having with the power grid, we haven't had a problem yet, but they're telling us to raise the temperature a little bit here in the next few days because of the heat wave. But then on the other hand, you have Beto O'Rourke, who I think has a lot more problems. And I find it interesting, George, I don't know if you're picking this up down in South Texas, but Beto O'Rourke has a huge problem with independents. He can't seem to win them over, George.
He really does. I mean, Beto O'Rourke has problems all over the place. He really does. And the fact of the matter is that the only thing that seems to be holding him up is the liberal media, who refuses to, again, see the reality of the situation of his campaign. I mean, his campaign, his rallies are not attracting very many people. His message is all over the place. He tries to appear very liberal to the very liberal, but then he tries to appear moderate to others. You know, which is it? Which Beto are we talking to today? I guess it depends on where, you know, where he is in the audience. The other aspect of it is that these polls that have come out, some of them, you know, one in particular that was done a couple of weeks ago, they don't reflect, they're not accurately done. They are done in a manner which, you know, will show a favorable situation. But the fact of the matter is that he is just not gaining ground. He is not, I mean, he's stuck. His message is being overwhelmed by what's going on at the border, by Biden himself. It is really, really a bad situation for Beto. And, you know, if Democrats don't want to admit the reality, well, you know, here it appears like what they're trying to do is tell us, okay, don't, you know, ignore what you really see and listen to what we tell you.
Right, exactly. No, I think you're right. I think for those of us who remember his campaign from 2018, when the campaign was very vibrant and there was a lot of energy in that campaign, certainly in the crowds, I mean, it's incredible what 4 years can do, because he is completely another problem, and you mentioned it correctly. Another problem that he has is that he's off the front pages. I mean, you very rarely see anything about Beto O'Rourke. Obviously, the governor is in the front pages because, obviously, the issues, the border and property taxes and so on. So the governor, by definition, is on the front pages. But you would think that, I mean, that Beto O'Rourke would make the front pages more often, and he really doesn't. I mean, he doesn't with the Dallas Morning News. He's always in the Metro page, which is okay, but even there, he's not getting that much coverage, George.
And that's exactly right. I mean, he is really, really limping in this race, and you know, if it gets much worse, I mean, he may just fall apart.
Right. Well, that's what I think. Yeah, go ahead and finish. I'm sorry, because I want to make a point
just,
about that.
You know, he is limping along. He's going to fall apart, in my opinion, because you just can't ignore the facts. You cannot ignore the facts of what is happening at the border. You cannot ignore the facts that our gas and oil industry is hurting. You cannot ignore the facts that, you know, we have a baby formula problem. We can't, you know, you can't ignore those facts. And, you know, it is catching up with him, and it's gonna be a disastrous, in my opinion, a disastrous election.
Right. Now, there is, of course, I think his only hope is that the lights go out. I mean,
and then even then, here in San Antonio, the city council has been talking about the power plant that we have. Which there is one coal power plant, and that coal power plant saved us during the last February's snow and blizzard when all the lights went out. That was the only thing that saved parts of San Antonio, and now they're actually talking about closing it down. Beto comes in, visits a community nearby, and talks about the pollution and supports it. You know, that'll come back to haunt him if they close it down.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's just he doesn't seem to have an idea. He's not connecting with people on issues.
No, he's not.
I think in 2018 he was able to connect with people on pure personality. In 2022 he's got a different opponent. He's got a governor who, you know, is I think doing a pretty good job given all the problems we have. And O'Rourke just doesn't seem to have a campaign to run on, other than let's replace Abbott. Okay, that's fine. That's, oh, you know, the opponent always says that, but I think the voter wants to hear something a little bit more complete than that. We're going to take a little break, George. When we come back, we'll talk about the Attorney General's race and that runoff down in South Texas, not close from George, or not far from George, I should say. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, May the 14th, talking with our friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. George, let's talk about the Attorney General's runoff coming up, I guess, in a couple of weeks. Early voting begins on Monday. It's going to be an expensive race. Both sides have a lot of money. And right now it looks like the Attorney General is ahead. I said Abbott, but I meant not Abbott. Of course, Abbott is the governor. But the Attorney General is ahead right now, it looks like, in the polling data. There's a great article today in the Dallas Morning News showing how George P. Bush is moving to the right on immigration and border issues, and he's getting some pretty good endorsements as well. Am I the only one who thinks that this race is going to be closer than people think? For some reason, everybody thinks it's going to be.
I don't know. I've got to be honest with you. I've got to be honest with you. From what we see here in South Texas, what I've seen in talking to folks in West Texas and even in East Texas in the Houston area, Paxton's got a pretty solid following. I think that again, the media. I don't think that the Dallas Morning News has historically been a very conservative, in-touch newspaper. I think they're good, but, you know, I think they have their limitations. And Texas Monthly also came out with a real good article about George P. And again, Texas Monthly is not your most conservative grassroots publication. Here in San Antonio, I'll tell you, let's start there. In San Antonio, historically, well, not historically, but in the past 3 years when he served as land commissioner, he left a very bitter taste in people's mouth over the way that he handled the Alamo. He literally turned the Alamo over to the conservancy of the city, which has proceeded to literally rewrite the history of the Alamo. I mean, there is a big battle going on right now about how the city wants to diversify the history of the Alamo. Well, the reason that people come to the Alamo is about the battle, not to learn about everything else like the peons and the local settlers. I mean, they can go to. There are six other missions in San Antonio they can go to, and where they can do that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that consistently they are talking. The city council keeps bringing up the issue of slavery, which was one of the things that George P. allowed to be brought to the table. I mean, instead of focusing on the Battle of the Alamo, all these things have been very, very bitter taste about how he handled that. The other thing is that, again, historically, in the past, he has been very, very moderate on the issue of immigration. And he really hadn't said anything until he started running for office, and then all of a sudden now he's moving to the right on the issue of immigration. Well, you know, and that's like, you know, saying, well, all right, let's start putting water on the blaze, and the building's already on fire.
Right. Now, what about
there is a very, very I don't see that it's that close. I feel very, very strongly that Paxton is definitely in a strong lead.
Right. So you think Paxton will win by more than 10 points probably, which is what the polling, or maybe even 15, which is what the polling data is showing. I think you're right in you know, when I said closer, I was saying more like 10, he was still going to win. But what I'm trying to say is that there is this cloud over Paxton that just doesn't go away. And I don't know how much of it is real or how much of it is just driven by the media that obviously does not like him. And I think a lot of it, you know, there is a cloud. And I think a lot of people are sitting saying, gee, what happens if this were to explode in the middle of the campaign? Could that hurt his campaign? I don't think so, because I think if there was something really bad out there, it would have already come out.
They would have brought it up
a
long time ago.
Yeah.
They would have
sunk the Bush people
a long time ago.
Well, the Bush people would have brought it out, probably.
I think it's, again, it's accusations, it's allegations, and that's, you know, it's a cloud.
Right.
And that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and sometimes clouds don't bring rain. As we know here in Texas, sometimes there's lots of clouds and it doesn't rain. Okay, let's look at what I think is the most interesting race, and that is down in South Texas, Henry Cuellar, Representative Henry Cuellar, who is probably the most conservative of the Democrats right now, has been a big critic of the Biden administration, as you know, on the border. He was put in a runoff by a young woman, Jessica Cisneros. And, you know, it's like 50-50. I mean, he almost survived. You know, he almost avoided the runoff. I think it was he got like less than 51, I think, right? I mean, it was almost a tie, I guess. There must have been a third candidate that brought down Cuellar. But where do you see that right now, George? I mean, I think this
it's very interesting, Sylvia.
Yes,
let me tell you, you know, Jessica Cisneros is, as we know, is backed heavily by AOC, by the Squad, by Elizabeth Warren, by Bernie Sanders, by the far left part of the Democratic Party, and she is consistently talking about her poor family, her poor roots. Poverty, 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 outcast, outcast, outcast. That seems to be her main, her introductory theme. However, in the past 2 weeks, I mean, it's been at least that long, the past 2 weeks, and it seems to be intensifying, she has enough money, and I'm not sure where the money's coming from, but she's got enough money to be running ads on daylight TV, on daytime TV. I mean, not in the evening when it's cheaper, but at daytime TV, she is running ads like crazy. Most recent ads, of course, have to do with Cuellar being pro-life. She talks about her family migrating to the United States. Doesn't mention that they came illegally, but migrating to the United States to get health care. Again, doesn't mention that they came illegally and they got health care, you know, never having put into the system. You know, the way that she is portraying herself, I guess, is masterful for somebody who is running a liberal campaign that wants to be a person who will fight for the little guy. But the question is, where is all that money coming from? I mean, if she's so poor, I mean, how can you afford constant, almost hourly, yes, almost hourly, ads on daytime television? I mean, it's incredible. I mean, that's got to be several million dollars worth of ads that she's running.
Oh, so of course. I mean,
that's a big. Yeah. I mean, that's a big question that people should be asking. Who is financing that?
Right. Well, you probably some of the same people who were financing Beto in 2018.
Sure.
If you remember all the money that came in. So I think, but there's an interesting point that I wanted to make when you mentioned about all this money coming in. The Democrat Party, no matter what happens in this primary, the Democrat Party is going to be awfully divided. And Henry Cuellar is going to be in a very tough position because he's going to need a lot of these people who are voting for Cisneros.
That's
and,
right.
And in the general election. So, you know, if you look at this, you know, he's going into the general election. I mean, let's say he survives. Let's say Henry Cuellar survives. He's going to have to somehow, how does he bring these people who voted for Cisneros into the race? Henry Cuellar is pro-life. He is tough on the border. Do you
because
believe,
some of these
George?
They're not politicians. They are ideologues, and they
right,
will not
exactly.
forgive him very quickly, you know, even if he reaches out for them.
Right. So, you know, that may do you see some of the people who voted for who are voting for Jessica Cisneros saying the heck with Cuellar, we're going to stay home or we're
oh, yeah.
going to go with I don't think they
oh,
can
yeah.
go third party.
Yeah, no. I well, you know, third party is almost like staying home, you know.
Right,
in my book. I mean, I just don't think that a third party can mount the young socialist. There was a young socialist that was running. That's why they ended up in a tie, and that's who stole a lot of the votes from her, because maybe she could have beat him, you know.
But in the general election, George.
In the general election. But there was a young socialist, and he stole a lot of her thunder. But you know, if in this race, if he wins, and I do believe that he's going to be able to pull it out.
Yes.
It's going to be a squeaker, but I do believe that he's going to be able to pull it out. I think that, it'll be very, very difficult for him. He's going to be terribly injured. The Democrat mm-hmm. Party is going to be terribly injured after it, because I don't think that the ideologues that support her are going to turn around and, you know, play politics and support him. I just don't
Absolutely.
Think that they have that streak of forgiveness or that streak of being
right.
politically astute.
Not pragmatic, like you say. They're ideologues who are going to look at, who actually think Cuellar is a bigger problem than the Republican running against them.
Yeah.
So they're going to be like that. But let me ask you one technical question. In the general election, obviously, Democrat, Republican. But I thought that in general elections, there was a space for like a Libertarian or for another party because there's a Green Party down there, a lot of them may just go with the Green Party just as a form of protest. Again,
right.
It may not be a lot of them, but look, Henry Cuellar needs every one of those Democrats who voted for Jessica Cisneros, because he is running into a Republican wave, as you know, and the young lady or the lady who's running on the Republican side, she's a good candidate, and she's going to show up with a lot of votes. So
there are two ladies running, and there is a runoff on the Republican side as well. Two ladies, Cassie Garcia and Whetton. And Whetton, both of them had a debate on Thursday night in Laredo, and I will tell you, it was packed. It was absolutely packed. Tremendous response to their discussion. Lots and lots of new faces. Lots and lots of folks who were very, very interested in hearing a Republican for a change. And
right.
It bodes. I mean, it does not bode well for the Democratic Party in South Texas.
No, it doesn't. And I think that's, to me, that's going to be the big story. When you and I look back at the election in November,
yep.
I think that's going to be one of the big stories. Well, George, as always, I want to thank you so much for your time. Here's another bit of history. I just want to drop this one really, really quickly. 50 years ago, actually it's 50 years ago Sunday, so May 15th, George Wallace was shot when he was campaigning in Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that. It was 72.
Or
68 he ran as an independent and took 15% of the vote. But in 72, he came back to the Democrat Party, and he was campaigning in the Maryland primary.
Correct.
And he was shot at a shopping center, as you may remember. He survived, thankfully. But that shooting, you know, you always wonder about, yeah, you always wonder about these things. What if, you know, what if he had not been shot? Because obviously he couldn't campaign after that. But what a, one of those game-changing moments, I think, in American history. George Wallace shot in Maryland. As I say, it was May 15th, 1972, so it's not technically until Sunday, which would be tomorrow. We're speaking on Saturday. But I just thought I mentioned that, you know, you start getting old or you start getting realistic when you talk about things that happened 50 years ago and you remember them, George.
Well, I worry when I don't start remember things.
Well, I guess the good news for you and me is that we remember them.
Yes.
But it still, you go there and you say, oh, my gosh, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was trying to remember, I think I saw it on TV, the breaking news that the George Wallace had been shot in Maryland. But what an amazing moment that was.
Yeah,
George is always
having the 35th anniversary of Dirty Dancing.
Oh, my goodness. Now, that makes it, that's even worse, George.
Oh, my gosh.
Because that was a great movie. I mean, that was a great movie. That was a fun movie to watch. Well, George, as always, thank you for your time. Have a great weekend in South Texas.
You.
And make sure you hose yourself a lot in this heat and humidity.
Hydrate.
Yes, drinking lots of liquid, because that's going to be the name of the game here for about a week or so, probably for the rest of the summer if it's like this every year. Have a great day, George, and again, thanks for your input. It's always great to have you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, George. George Rodriguez, our good friend in South Texas, always check with him to see what's happening in the political situation. But yes, 50 years ago that George Wallace was shot while campaigning in Maryland for the Maryland primary. Wow, time flies. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. This is Silvio Canto, and I'll talk to you later.